Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
We are continuing to, of course, track the snow for you. We'll give you the latest with your traffic and weather in just a few minutes. I did want to turn your attention, though, to something else that's been very important in the headlines. That's COVID. As you know, this week and even into next, there are a lot of school districts that have had to close down, to have delayed openings, have early dismissals because they've got shortages of bus drivers, they've got shortages of teachers, even students, and it's all because of COVID exposure. Joining me now is Fran Rabinowitz, who, of course, have heard from Fran. She was just actually on the show about a week or so ago, and she's back here this morning to talk a little bit about this. She is, of course, the executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. Good morning, Fran. Thanks for being on this morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So, Fran,
it's a very snowy morning.
It is. It really is. It's. I was hoping that it wouldn't be too busy for you because it seems like at least most of the districts in our area they're closed. So, school's out.
Oh, everyone. Just about everyone is. I actually don't know anyone that's open. But the good news is, I think everyone was happy for a snow day today.
Yes.
Maybe not. The families. I don't know, but. Certainly the staff and the students.
Yeah, I don't know. As a mom, I'm very excited that my son is home this morning. I'm very excited to get home and just hang out with him for the afternoon. So, I don't know. I'm sure everyone's kind of excited for at least the first or second snowstorm of the season. Even if you don't like snow, there's something kind of exciting.
There is something exciting about it. And this has been a very difficult week for everyone. So, we were all hoping for snow last night, believe me.
Well, it is here. It certainly is here, and a lot of kids and families are off today. Fran, I wanted to talk to you about really weather can actually play a part in this. I'm getting this sense that remote learning is like the worst thing on the planet. And before, you know, we dive into this conversation, I find it interesting, and I've been hoping to talk to someone about this. You know, we went through over a year of remote learning and remote working. And I think for workers, we've learned to figure out if we have to do remote working for 2 weeks because there was an outbreak, no big deal. I get this weird sense, though, especially from the governor and his team, that just saying remote learning is the worst thing in the world. And I find it interesting, you know, for example, on Wednesday when you have that ice storm, why remote learning wasn't an option, or with Ansonia Public Schools, for example, they don't have enough bus drivers. So why can't we do remote learning till people feel better, at least till we get through this COVID surge? I'm confused why remote learning is being so frowned upon.
You know, Melissa, it's a wonderful question. So let me start by saying that what we know is educating students in person is certainly the most effective way of teaching and learning. Everybody who's involved in education has told us that. The students themselves have said, please, you know, let us come to school. We really enjoy being with our teacher. We enjoy being with our friends. The families have, you know, much said, you know, across the board, but not everyone. There are some people that felt that.
Hold on, Fran, your phone connection's not great. It keeps going in and out.
Okay, sorry.
No, you're okay.
I mean, there were very few that said they wanted remote learning for their children, but there were a few. And then the teachers really did not feel that it was effective for their students. With that said, we all feel that we should have the option of remote learning for inclement snow days or inclement weather days. And the legislature, many of us have bills in for the legislature for this session to allow the option of remote learning. not, and it needs to go through the legislature at this point or an executive order from the governor. We do feel that we should have the option. I mean, I think there's something wonderful about waking up and having a snow day. I just like you said, you wanted to be with your son. I think families love that feeling of being off. But the option should be there, we think, of having snow days if a district needs it. So the reason is the legislature did not vote on that last session. They're looking at remote learning coming up this session and seeing how it fits into the overall pattern. Your perception is probably based upon the fact that no one is doing it because we don't have the option to do it without legislative approval or an executive order from the governor. So with that said, I would also say to you that most of us don't feel that remote learning is a wonderful option by itself for students, but we do think that in addition to a regular curriculum, there's a whole lot that can be done with remote learning. Hey, if I'm in Bridgeport, I'm the superintendent in Bridgeport, and you're the superintendent in Fairfield, and my child wants to take a course in Mandarin Chinese, I don't have a Chinese teacher. I should be able to call you and say, I know you're teaching, you know, you have Mandarin Chinese. Can my student join you in a class remotely? And, you know, I think that would be really important. I couldn't find a physics teacher when I was in Bridgeport. It would have been a wonderful thing to be able to join another district. So that's a long-winded answer, but that's where we are.
We're chatting with Fran Rabinowitz. She's the executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, and we're talking about the remote learning saga. I just want to make my opinion on this very clear. I agree that kids should be in school. I think it's the best learning environment for them. I know for myself with a toddler, I prefer him in school. He does better that way. He fails online. He does not do well. He struggles online. So I absolutely agree with the idea of keeping kids in school. The thing I guess I'm kind of hung up on here, Fran, and there were a couple of comments that I just wanted to then comment on. I know waking up to a snow day, absolutely. I think that kids deserve that. We should not take kids' childhood away from them. I loved having snow days as a kid. I'm sure you did as well. But, you know, when you compare a snow day here and there to 1 to 3 weeks off from school because you've got a shortage of bus drivers or we have a shortage of teachers because of COVID, and in a lot of those situations, they're just mild symptoms or they were exposed and they're just waiting for test results to come back. So I guess my question is kind of going back to it. Do you think in your professional opinion, like to me, I guess as a parent, I'd rather my kid stay consistent with whatever lessons he's doing, even if it's online, versus taking a break for a week and then coming back to something. Then maybe 3 weeks later, we got to take another break and then we come back to it just until we can get through, you know, this COVID surge. It sounds like it'll be over. Maybe February is when it should start to really die down. So this interruption of just, all right, I guess we're just going to take days or weeks off and we'll tack on at the end of the school year, that doesn't seem like a good idea to me, and maybe I'm missing something.
So Melissa, you make total sense. So let me just say to you that, let me just give you a little background on, and you probably already know this, but from the day that schools closed for Christmas until January 3rd when they reopened, I don't know a superintendent and a team in every school district that actually had vacation. They spent the entire time thinking and working on plans for opening. Mm-hmm. And they felt that it was that important to their kids to ensure that they had a safe environment coming back to school and their staff. I would say to you that amazing things went on during that week, and more than 160 districts opened. And I'm not saying it was perfect, but it was good. And there were instances, you know, certainly Ansonia could not open, or Stratford, and they did everything in their power to open. And so I think they were, you know, absolutely in the minority. Bus drivers were shared among districts. It was pretty amazing stuff. With that said, I would say to you that I believe that in the future, you will probably see much more remote learning going on across the state. What I think needs to happen before that is not just an act of the legislature, but an awful lot of work on what remote learning looks like. Because during the COVID surge, and, you know, when we all closed, educators did a yeoman's job of pivoting to remote learning. But you know what? It looked very different across the state. It looked it looked different in one district from another. Some districts had teachers on the entire time and they were streaming. Some districts gave assignments out in the morning and the teachers were not on at all or on for 20 minutes a day.
Interesting.
Very, very different. And the state Department of Education is charged with coming up with standards for remote learning, which will be in place in January. I think after that, you will see some options for remote learning that we don't have right now. But I do think it is important for us to get standards together. And I know I'm harping on an old subject, but as a former administrator and interim superintendent of Bridgeport, I have to say, I also care deeply about ensuring that every child has access to remote learning. And we all know that our most challenged students, many of them did not. And we need to ensure that happens as well.
Everything you just said, Fran, makes complete sense. Like, that's what I was looking for all week long, because, you know, you have, well, it's because it's true. You know, I have like Mayor Cassetti of Ansonia, and he's like, I would love to do remote learning, but instead we're tacking on in June. And I'm like, well, how's that great? Because kids don't want to be in school into June and July. They want to have their summer break. And you know, and I get the executive order. I get the whole, and I'm just thinking to myself, why is this so complicated? What you just said just solved everything. That made all the, that makes sense, because you're right.
Well,
no, it's true, because from district to district, look, you only know where your kid goes to school, but you don't know what the kids in the town next door, what the city next door, like what you just revealed to me. I had no idea that you've got, I mean, that is like night and day. You have some schools that are doing a full curriculum live for a full school day, and then you have some who are virtually not there unless it's a few minutes a day. Like those are extremes, and you're absolutely right.
They are extremes.
That's an extreme. You need standards in place, and I wasn't even aware that there were no standards for virtual learning. I didn't even know that.
No, but there will be. I mean, I know that the State Department is very very busy at work on them, and so we will have standards, and then and hopefully we will have Wi-Fi and everything else that we need to make this happen for every child in Connecticut. So I think when that occurs, you know, I still believe in-person learning is wonderful.
I agree.
There's no, you know, there's just no substitute for it. But I do think remote learning has a lot to offer, and we never wanted to go back to normal. We wanted to go back to the new normal and take what we've learned and incorporate it into our curriculum as we move forward.
Exactly.
It just takes time. But I know that the legislature did set times for standards, et cetera. And I've been on lots of calls looking at Massachusetts virtual learning school, et cetera. So I know you're going to see some changes in that.
In the meantime, though, Fran, until those changes come, I know we're running out of time, but until those changes come, do you think they will shorten the school year, or do you think kids are going to be in school till the end of June?
I think kids in those districts where learning didn't occur this week, I don't think they will shorten the school year. And I do think that there may be some creative ways to do it other than just adding it on to June. There may be some professional development days in there where kids had off and kids and teachers were in school. We may put the professional development on hold. We have to hope that what's outside now and is so beautiful doesn't occur for too many days.
Yeah.
And I think most schools were getting out pretty early in June. So I think they're going to look creatively to find ways to make up those days.
Fran Rabinowitz, the executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. It is such a pleasure to always have you on the show. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Melissa. Take care.
Thank you. Happy snow day.
What's happening in Hartford and how it affects you? Senate Republican leader Kevin Kelly joins Melissa in the morning now on WICC 600.
And just a heads up to everyone, starting next week, unless I have this wrong, Senator Kevin Kelly will start joining us weekly on Friday mornings at 7:05, which is where he was last summer when we were going through the last session. So good morning to you. Happy New Year, Senator Kevin Kelly. Thanks for being here.
Good morning and Happy New Year to you and your listeners. Good morning and thanks for being up all day and making sure that our communities are informed.
Oh, gosh, Kevin Kelly, don't you worry about that. I love it. Are you kidding? This is what we do, right? I mean, you go up and you try to help change our lives and fix our lives and pass laws and things like that. I get up at weird hours of the morning and I tell you to stay off the roads. That's what I do. So there you go. I appreciate it, though. Thank you so much. Earlier this week, Senator Kelly, it sounded like you and many members of your caucus, you guys have a plan to, shockingly enough, save us some money, which sounds great for me. Could you tell us a little bit about this tax relief?
Sure. Well, first, our caucus attacks many of these issues at the Capitol from the perspective that we're not just going to say no to the governor and the majority, but we're going to show everyone the better way. You know, we're going to show people what would happen should Republicans be in charge of their government.
Mm.
And what we have right now is a situation where we have a balanced budget that many in our caucus voted for. We have historic dollars going into the rainy day fund and into debt retirement. So that's also good, taking money off the state credit card. But what we're also experiencing right now in the state budget is a windfall as a result of the unaffordability of the Connecticut economy. We have so much inflation. You look at gas prices, you look at your weekly food budget, and these inflationary costs are now impacting what I call kitchen table economics, the family budgets. And so what we believe is only fair is that rather than have a state budget that right now is fairly healthy to benefit from this inflationary tendency, and what we're going to do is take those funds and return it back to the people of Connecticut by reducing the sales tax from 6.35 down to 5.99.
So what is that going to mean? In layman's terms, how much money are we talking this is going to save people or give people?
It's going to save every Connecticut family somewhere in the neighborhood of about $250 a year. And that we're doing it now for the rest. We would start on February 15th and go through the end of the year.
Okay. So I would think, as you mentioned, Senator Kelly, you know, we're healthy in pretty much every other facet of our financial, our financials look pretty good in Connecticut. And we've been touting that actually for quite some time, even during the pandemic, which is interesting. So I would imagine, do you guys have bipartisan support on this? I mean, who would fight this? Why would we fight this?
Good question. The fact of the matter is middle-class families are struggling with this economy. All families actually are struggling with this. And this is a quick, easy way. We can start it February 15th. It's just changing the tax rates. We could put a bill before the legislature when we open come February 9th, they could act as soon to put this in place by February 15th and bring immediate relief while inflation is here. What I do hear from the governor and the majority is that they're looking at property tax credits, child care tax credits, and that's something we can look at. It's not that Republicans have no appetite for that. We do. But that's going to come next year when you file your income tax returns. And that's only for families who actually have a job and income,
who qualify,
file an income tax return, and own a home.
Right.
We want something that's broad-based, something that everybody can participate in and bring the relief as soon as possible. And this could be weeks away,
right.
Literally.
Right. So I'm interested, and we're talking to State Senator Kevin Kelly. Would the reason be that they feel like they're going to miss out on money? Like how much money, I mean, are we making a lot of money off of the inflation rates, you know, or sales tax, for example? Does that question make sense?
Yes. Right now, we're sitting at about $315 to $320 million windfall. And that's before we're going to have consensus revenue numbers coming out mid to late January. So once those come in, I think we're going to show that the Connecticut economy is even a little, you know, the windfall is even a little bit bigger. And once again, we're going to be looking at taking that windfall and returning it back to a cash-strapped Connecticut taxpayer. From our perspective, you know, Connecticut families and taxpayers are having a tough go of it. We're the second highest tax citizenry in the country. The people in Connecticut, after the sacrifices they've made, need a break. And this is a way to give them that break during inflationary times.
Sure. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I'm just curious, Senator Kelly, and I'm not trying to dim down the amount. $250 is a lot of money. But do you think the governor and the Democrats, if they are against this idea, because they haven't come out and said that they are against it, it did sound like some people on the Democratic side were like, hey, we need to work together. Let's try to make things more affordable. But Do you think they'd be against it because that $250 amount is pretty small in comparison to keeping money in the state? Do you think that they feel that's insignificant?
I don't know. I don't know where their perspective is. What I do know is that I think this is a good idea. It's a common sense idea. And good ideas usually find friends. And so I'm hopeful that we'll have conversation and that we will have tax relief. If they don't think it goes far enough, I'd like to hear some proposals. Let's sit down. Let's have conversations. Maybe we can go further. I think Connecticut families would love to see further tax relief.
Mm-hmm.
But let's have that conversation, and we wanted to start it off. I think this is a simple, straightforward proposition. The Connecticut budget is benefiting from a inflation windfall, and during that inflationary times, you know, our budget right now is balanced. We should give that money back to the struggling families of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Kelly, have you already gotten any feedback since making this announcement this week? Like, could this obviously would go into effect in February if it were to pass. Does it sound like it will get support in time for it to start in February?
Well, we're still early in this process, but I think once again, I think if we stay focused on the issues, stay focused on Connecticut families, I think we'll get support. We should get support because if anybody's focused on their issues and what the shoes that they walk in, this is a no-brainer. This is a layup. Like I say, Connecticut families are struggling. This is a way to bring some relief, and it's what our government should do for the people, given the fiscal health of the state of Connecticut.
Well, Senator Kevin Kelly, we appreciate the great ideas that you always put forward, and hopefully we do see some kind of resolution with this so that things can go into action by February. That would be really great. Senator Kelly, we appreciate your time, and have a good snow day. We'll see you next Friday, it sounds like.
Yes, you bet.
All right. Thank you so much. You too. Good morning. I know a lot of schools are off this morning, so kiddos, you get to sleep in. Moms and dads, you get to go, all right, no school routine. Hopefully you get to at least work remotely or be off today as well. But we're talking school this morning, a great topic with our education consultant, Liz Englander, who is here right now. Good morning, Liz. Happy Friday. How are you?
Oh, Melissa, this is not my favorite time of year. Believe me, I look outside right now, and God knows how many inches are up here. But whatever, I'm sure the kids will enjoy it, and that's the most important thing.
Well, hopefully everybody is safe, as I mentioned out there. I mean, certainly for the kids playing, that's one thing. But for the drivers, you definitely want to take it easy out there. No one really loves driving in snow. I've never heard of anyone loving to drive in snow. So definitely a heads up there. Liz, I think you have a great topic today. We're talking about reading and your kids. What are we chatting about?
Well, you know, Melissa, every week that I go on your show, I try to find something in my portfolio or you know, increase my reading and go on and find something interesting. And this was something that I reviewed again, and I thought it would be important to share with your listeners. Does your child have a reading problem? Many of us go and we get tutors, and I have been in that position, tutoring and so forth, but I neglected, too, in all my years of working with children to really think about something that was very important. And whether your child can't read or won't read, it may be worthwhile to look beyond the usual causes such as poor eyesight, dyslexia, or ADHD. Most parents are not aware of the unusual things that really can affect children's reading ability and motivation. Pediatric sleep disorder, known as SDB, is a very, very frequent cause. The biggest sign of sleep disordered breathing is habitual snoring and sleeping with the mouth open. Now, you might find your husband doing that, somebody else. That's common. You give them a kick or something to stop, but sometimes it's really more than that. And the more you're aware of this and the more you read about, you see it is a problem. And other signs include crowded teeth, those that are perfectly aligned baby teeth with no spaces between them may indicate that the new adult teeth will be too crowded, which I didn't even realize.
I didn't think of that either.
And sometimes the crowded teeth will really result in an elongated face changing between the ages of 6 to 9. I couldn't believe that when I reread this article, but there is a lot of truth to it, and we really are not aware of it. And the most severe form of sleep disorder breathing is obstructive sleep apnea. Now, you have a lot of these doctors now doing these sleep disorder tests in adults, but, you know, a lot of parents are not aware of this, too, and it does occur in children. And even the modest preclinical levels of sleep disordered breathing may have a detrimental effect on cognition, which is so important, and behavior in children. If a parent in this day and age see any signs suggesting sleep disordered behavior, sleep study is often really the next step. But it is important to have a test that detects all levels of sleep disorder breathing, not just a severe form of sleep apnea. Now, to address these issues, consult with a provider, which is so important, who has specialized in training airway issues, the underlying cause of sleep disorder breathing. This would be an osteopathic doctor and holistic dentist, which I really was not aware of myself either. And this is the most important. When seeking a reading evaluation for a struggling reader, it is advised for parents to choose a reading specialist who is knowledgeable about CDB. There are a lot of people out there in the field, including myself, have many, many credentials and do teach reading. But if the problem does just repeat itself, it is very important to go beyond just a tutor or reading a specialist. It is really important to find somebody who is well trained in this area, and they will pick up this after some testing and be able to direct you and your family and relieve a lot of tensions and stress with the reading. Because if you don't have that tool as reading as you're going along in life, you are lost. You need to be able to read. And the right evaluator can make all the difference in uncovering the facts of your child's reading problems and providing effective solutions. And those solutions will alleviate a lot of tensions and problems as a child grows and develops. You see so many children in public school now or wherever they're doing, struggling with reading and comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it even in the facilities I go to visit, and they get frustrated and they start having a temper tantrum. Or one of the schools I worked with this week, a very large school in the New Haven area, they used the smart boards for the first time this week.
Mm.
And it's a very diverse population, and a lot of the children are not aware of a lot of their reading concepts. And that's why the wonderful school it is, they work very carefully with them. And there was a lot of frustration levels because they couldn't even sound out some of the words phonetically and whatever. And I sat with them too, and I tried to relieve some of the frustration level and whatever. And all the educators are doing a great job, but I think sometimes we need to look a little deeper into the problem so we can solve it. But reading is one of the most important tools for education. And if we can't read and comprehend, we're going to be lost in the shuffle, Melissa.
Mm-hmm. And Liz, you know, you bring up a lot of great points, things that I don't even know if all parents really know about. And Liz, if people want to contact you about whether it's reading comprehension or whether it's any kind of educational matter regarding their children, how do they contact you directly?
They could contact me by calling me at 203-929-1352 or 203-258-4351. I just want to thank you, Christian, Paul, and all my wonderful listeners on WICC for all their good wishes for the new year and all the beautiful letters I've gotten. I appreciate everything that you have done for me, and I love working with you.
Oh, Liz. Well, we love working with you, and we thank you so much for staying with us even into the new year. Liz will be here every other Friday into 2022. Thank you so much, Liz.
God bless you, and have a happy day, and have fun with your little one outside.
Thank you. Yes, we're very excited. Going to go build a snowman, that's for sure. Already getting the text messages from my husband. He's like, where are the snowsuits? All right.